The caretaker's house had some damage, but not the roof damage of the mansion. We later learned that the damage in the caretaker's house was more through frozen, broken interior piping. And there was really not the exterior damage. The garage had a tree, or one tree, and maybe more, I can't recall the picture right now, across the roof. And those trees were immediately removed, and the garage was made secure as far as weather. There was no development as now you see with the restrooms and that sort of thing in the garage. They did not come early, they were fairly late. And so the garage was really a utility type building to maintain certain activities during the restoration. The tennis courts, I don't have much recall as to what happened at that time with the tennis courts. In fact, I'm not even sure that they were not removed at an earlier time by Eric Ladd or by someone else, because I do not recall those. The parking lot that we first used on coming to this, and that was, by the way, was the first time that I'd ever really been to this site, even though I'd lived in Portland for some while. But the parking lot was a gravel parking lot and covered with trees. Those are really the description that I recall of the of the three buildings, the garage, the mansion, and the gate lodge.
Were there, for example, windows that were broken?
There were some broken windows, yes. And Eric, and I talked with Eric Ladd about his remembrance of being in the building, and he said there were some very harried experiences. This is going back a bit, but it's colorful because he was here really by himself for a great deal of the time. I think he lived in the mansion for off and on for a couple of years, from 57 through 59. But he remembers that it was very difficult to secure the building from those who intended vandalism or thievery. And he recalled at least once of being held at bay while people just kind of took things as they saw them from inside the building. He was just captive to a group of vandals at least once that he recited. And it was very disconcerting to have this nice structure and not be able to secure it. And of course, as a piece of private property, it didn't demand or attract the attention of the police as it would under public property. But
now, was there anyone working at the Gate Lodge at that time?
No.
There was no one living on the grounds?
No. He was solely the caretaker at that time. Peter Gantenbein did intend to dispose of it. He felt that it was too, from what I gather from talking with Eric Ladd, Peter felt that it was a difficult piece of property to maintain, and he had no intention of living here further by himself. So disposal was imminent at the time that the beginning of acquisition took place.
And I gather none of the other family members were willing.
To my knowledge, assume. None of the other family really felt attracted to maintaining the building.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you said in the beginning, a white elephant, really. A beautiful white elephant.
Yes,
but
and it undoubtedly, if the property had been acquired by a developer as proposed, and the proposal also included the demolition of this building, the property for development of residential sites is very, very handsome. Mm-hmm. It commands a 180-degree view all the way from St. John's all the way down almost to Oregon City, sort of. And that's held a very high premium for residential development.
Do you think that the Columbus Day storm focused attention on the mansion?
I think it did. Not at the time the storm took place, but because the storm provided an endangered situation. I mean, to look at the property with the trees falling across the building, you just felt that something had to take place now. If the trees hadn't been across the building, you might have said, well, it's not that necessary. It could be delayed. But yes, I think the Columbus Day storm did serve as a catalyst in a way, especially when you could see the damage that it caused and the penetration of water. When you went into the building, you said, this has to stop. And I think that in a way it served for some good.
Another question that comes to mind is, looking back now over the use of the mansion and the way the city council or the city uses the building, do you think that any of that was envisioned by our local politicians at the time that the property was acquired?
Well, let me begin a little bit back from your question, because one of the concerns during the acquisition and continued during the first period of the advisory commission was how the building as a public building would be used. There were those who felt that it should be used entirely as a museum for only a show place. There was the opposite side who felt that it should be completely opened and people should be able to go anywhere, and of course the furnishings could not be as elegant under those conditions. And I think fortunately the proper conclusion was made that the building was of significant merit for its materials and workmanship, which I truly believe it is, was of such significant merit that the building should be treated for both purposes. The word museum sounds like a dead type of space, but as a living situation, showing the elegance of this mansion, and at the same time affording a wonderful setting for official affairs. The council can use it as that, bringing people in from various countries, entertaining. It serves very, very well for that. I don't believe it could have done that had it just been open to the public for any use whatsoever, or just another meeting house. And I remember the discussions that took place before the advisory commission, and periodically, even though it had been concluded, there was there was a review of that conclusion through the years, time and time again. But had it just been another meeting space, I don't believe it would have ever attracted the attendance of visitors. A review was made of other buildings throughout the country of this nature to see how they had done, how they had worked the public-private situation. And it definitely was concluded that there would be nice furnishings, authentic, not certainly just authentic to the Pittock mansion, to the Pittock family, but authentic to the time period, and well selected, which would attract the visitation. And I think time has proven that that's worked out very well. And still have a meeting area, certainly at the basement level. There's, over the years, there's been discussion of enlarging the meeting provision, meeting area provision. There was even discussion of going underground from the building under the front courtyard, discussed at one time by the advisory commission, with the idea that if there were more areas, more spaces for public attendance, that might offset some of the cost of maintaining. But the cost of providing those spaces became quite high, and it was never carried more than just conversation. Mm-hmm. But that follows through your question of...
Well, another question I have is how did the Pittock Mansion Society originate?
Oh.
And what is its relationship to the restoration?
The Pittock Mansion, since the acquisitions, many people wanted to loan furniture, display to the mansion, but did not want it to become part of city property. And so the society was established separate from city officialdom to oversee, to maintain, to become that intermediary between the city and those private donors, benefactors. And this, many things have been given to the society, which the society holds. So I believe as the property of this building is established, the possessions are really not the part of the city. The building is part of, building is property, private, or the building is property of the city, mm-hmm. but the possessions are the property of the society, which may be on loan from private donors. So the society is really the overview, ongoing I'll use the word caretaker for lack of another word, of the mansion. The advisory commission is advisory to the city, to the mayor and the city council, but does not have the authority as the society does. The society is often involved in fundraising. The society does raise some substantial funds for the mansion and can direct them with the sanction of the city in what manner they may consider, such as the reestablishment of the caretaker's house, the gate lodge. There's been consideration to developing that, and it has been the society that has been active along, of course, the society works in concert, hopefully, with the advisory committee.
Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. I wanted to separate out these different roles because there seem to be about three different channels going on here.
I am a member of the society. I think I'm correct in my statement in that regard. It would be well to talk with members of the society, the officers, to get explicit.
I was going to ask who are some of the founding members of the society. Do you have any recollection of that? Were you among them?
No, I was not. I'm trying to... It seemed to kind of happen sort of all at once. I think Mrs. Norton Peck, again, was involved in the establishment of the society, recognizing from the beginning, although she served on the advisory committee, she recognized that this differentiation had to take place in order for it to... And I think the city agreed to that too, because there's an admission that legally the responsibility for possession of these artifacts, furnishings by private donors, was going to be difficult if they were handed over to the city. Not only that, but the insurance, well, the insurance picture also came into that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, who was responsible for carrying out the more detailed restoration? You spoke of craftsmen coming in, Fred Baker, I assume.
All right. There was an architectural consultant established. I believe that was George McMath, as an architectural historian, to establish the authenticity of the any reconstruction. There was not any large demolition of anything that had to be replaced, fortunately. So it was mostly reworking the details that were well established, were still quite visible, but needed repair. But the architectural consultant worked with through the park department. The park department was the responsible division of the city. And the park department was subject to the city council, so it went through those channels. And it was, I can't recall the name of the persons that I met through the park department that were very, very interested in maintaining the building. Ed Erickson was one who was the head of the park department. Prior to Ed Erickson, it was Harry Buckley was the director. And then coming forward from Ed Erickson, I can't remember the sequence of names, but I think the park department has been very receptive to maintaining. In fact, more than just casually, so I think they were enthusiastically participants in the maintenance and recreation restoration.
Well, I think it's admirable that they were able to locate so many of the original craftsmen and
that's
recall
true.
Them and involve them again in the project.
Right. I think more recently of the restoration of the window boxes that I can't recite in all the detail, but it was happening at the time that I was serving on the advisory commission. And the restoration of those window boxes, which have a lot of detail, take a very special type of knowledge and craft. And they were done beautifully, although some of the interesting little details of the payment to the artisan, which I can't remember in all detail, I hesitate to recite at this time, were fascinating. But fortunately, the craftsmen who were needed were found. And I don't know of anything that was really compromised when the intent was to restore it to its original form. I think it's all been done very... What amazes me, of course, about this building is the ongoing everyday maintenance that's applied to it. Thinking of the first caretaker, the name escapes me at the moment.
Mr. Skeen.
Yes, who just was so dedicated. And every time I come into the building, I just marvel at it, at its cleanliness and its the manner it's maintained. And I think that's recognized by the people coming to this city. I'm very proud of this building. I think, as a resident of this city, that it just is a wonderful heritage that is perpetuated. And I think the way it's been concluded, the manner that it's been managed, is just very complimentary to the city.
Yes, I believe that as well, too. Is there anything you wish to add about the Gate Lodge in particular? We spoke of it earlier.
Back in 77, sometime around that period, there was a concerted effort to arrive at a use for the Gate Lodge, because it had been felt all along that the building was a unique building, that it was certainly a part of the mansion, that in order that the grounds of the mansion be fully displayed, that the Gate Lodge was part of that display. However, just to open as a display did not meet the approval of the advisory committee or those talking on the subject. And it was felt that it should give some return for its use. So there was a long list of such things as meeting rooms and tea house and all sorts of ideas proposed as to how it could be used and return some, at least the cost of its maintenance in the form of dollars to the city. And also at that time, there was a review of the actual condition, because it had not been opened or used for a long period. And at that time, it was found that the interior piping, which ran inside the walls for some drains, such off of the balcony, had corroded and water had come into the interior, which greatly damaged the interior. And even though the structure of the Gate Lodge is like the mansion, with hollow tile walls and reinforced floors, very substantial, there was a lot of surface damage that in the way of the wood paneling that had to be replaced. And so the city agreed to allow the CETA, C-E-T-A, to, in the summer of 1977, Comprehensive Employment Training Act, to allow persons involved in that CETA program to work under the building. And there was a selection made so that it wasn't just anyone who was allowed, but there was, the park department went through some sort of screening to bring the most able people. And Al Staley, who is, I believe, current chairman of the advisory commission, who was an architect, oversaw and prepared the necessary documents for the restoration of the gate lodge. And so that was done. And the building was secured. Now the question is the activation of that building. The tea house idea is still one that is looked to in favor. Hopefully something will happen that will allow that building to... Many, many people have inquired about that caretaker's house, which has been changed, maybe a more colorful name, the Gate Lodge. Mm-hmm. It really was not the Gate Lodge, it was a caretaker's house. And have you ever been in it?
Yes, I have.
It's quite an interesting, very small little building, but an interesting one.
The design is definitely distinctive, mm-hmm. about it. Mm-hmm. The two rooms with four, mm-hmm. floors.
And I think it's a very pleasant collection of spaces for a person to live in, although they're small, and there's a lot of vertical travel in the process, mm-hmm. but Mr. Folks, the architect of the mansion, certainly did a interesting concept in its placement and design. I think it complements the mansion quite well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it does. Well, is there anything you would like to add?
I'm sure I will think of it after I leave, but right at the moment I can't think of anything that I would venture that I haven't... already announced.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you on behalf of the Pittock Mansion for spending this time to record this
information. It's been my pleasure, I assure you.
Thank you.